This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh my God, it's episode 63. Thank you, because I forgot. This is Anna.
This is Shireen.
And this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
And we're here with a very special guest, Natasha Shandall.
So,
did I say that right or wrong?
I think you said it right.
No, I said it wrong. She's saying it's okay. I definitely said it wrong.
Chandel.
Chandel.
Chandel as well.
I said it because of you, Anna.
I'm a mess.
But anyway, we have Natasha on today. She's an amazing guest. We talk about her life as a performer and turned into creative producer and how her life led her to beautiful LA. It's a great time. Please listen in.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Are back.
Sorry.
Oh, whoa. No, you go.
No,
seriously.
It's
on me. It's on me.
The show started is what we're trying to say.
The show is starting. This is Ethnically Ambiguous episode 63.
Thank you for saying that, because I never remember.
It's 63 episodes. That's over a year. That's 63. 3 plus 6 is 9. 9 upside down is 6. 666. Devil, we're dead.
Wait, what?
You just lost me completely. It's all connected, y'all.
Look, as a terrible Middle Eastern child, I don't know how to do math. And my parents have never forgiven me for it. And you can see it in text message where they go, learn to count, Anna, which I never will.
The only reason I know how to do any math is because I have to do the tallies in all our card games when we play together as a family. Well, we alternate, but, math.
That's you just know how to count, really, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. Sophie, I got that email you were requesting for. Guys, that was a little insight into what business is like at work here. Oh, thank you everyone for having me.
They just high-fived.
Back to the podcast. Keep that in. All right. Well, we have a great guest today.
A great guest.
She's the best. She had us on her show, which we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. So welcome, Natasha Shandall. Did I say that right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Why not?
Yeah. Thank God. Yeah, we were on your podcast.
Yes, you were.
A couple days ago, but it's not going to come out until, actually, if you're hearing this on Monday, it'll be out this week.
Yeah, it'll be on Tuesday.
It'll be out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We were on your podcast called Kind of Dating.
Yep.
How
we talked about how it was to handle immigrant parents, mm-hmm. or just handle parents in general, but we spoke about it through our experiences, and then about, what was the other one? Dating as an immigrant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah. We were on two episodes in a row. And are those going to come out back to back?
So, it'll be one Tuesday and then the
following
Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
Tuesday.
You guys. It's just 3 weeks in a row. Just all three of us together.
Oh, my God.
It's a blast.
Content,
yay,
baby.
Overload.
Yeah. You guys are going to love it.
So, why don't you start by telling us a little about your background and how you fall under the Ethnically Ambiguous umbrella.
God, yeah.
Because looking at you now, you can be anything.
Yeah.
I know.
What are you?
Says.
I already know the answer, but I'm pretending.
Well, I'm in Indian, but I am a creative executive and producer. That's like my day job. I'm a comedy writer and performer as well, and then a host of the podcast. I guess I fall as ethnically ambiguous. I don't really know why. I'm the purest Indian you've ever met. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's more because, like, especially in the city.
No.
I mean, you can be Hispanic.
Yeah, yeah.
You can
and
be
that's the thing. I get
Arab.
Everything. Yeah. I mean, even as an actor, I go out for. When I lived in New York, I was always going for Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And it's very funny because I get Dominican and Puerto Rican all the time mm-hmm. by Dominicans and Puerto Ricans. So Hispanic, Middle Eastern mm-hmm. a lot. And I was born in Dubai. So mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I'm representing. Indian, of course, yeah. but Native American. I kind of get like, and
we,
then
we get it all.
Yeah, and my very first film I ever booked, I was the star of a movie called Priya, and I played Priya, and she was this 15-year-old Indian girl. I was younger at the time, but they called me 3 times. Casting called me to be like, "So you're sure you're Indian?" And I was like, yes, I'm very sure that. And then they call me back. So you're sure there's no mix in your lineage? Like, you sure you're? And I was like,
what?
No, I'm telling. And then the third time, they were like, okay, you sure that there's no Asian in you? I'm like, wow, like that's what it's like. Just ask me that the first time.
Wow.
But no, there's
what
none.
Would Asian mean? Like, what are they trying to?
I think my eyes, like, especially when uh-huh. I was younger, and it's true if you look at older pictures of me, I don't know what it was, but my skin tone was even lighter.
Yeah.
And I've always tended to be like, I'm a lighter skin Indian, but we're North Indian. It's very common.
Yeah.
There's a billion of us. We're all different shades.
And
so I was lighter, and we talked about this. I used to wear contacts,
mm-hmm. right?
And my eyes used to be really heavy with contacts, and so they just looked smaller.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And like my dad has confused me for Asian girls
really?
All the time. When he used to pick me up from high school, he's like, "I was like, why are you walking by me?" And then she turned around, and she was an. I was like, "Really, Dad?
Yeah,
you don't know your own daughter."
Yeah, 50 Shades of Brown.
Yeah. Whatever. So yeah. Now I just joke. And, like, my name is pretty...
Natasha.
It's yeah. Natasha, which is a common Indian name, but if you don't know
oh, it
that...
Is?
Yeah, if you don't yeah. know that about Indians, it's Natasha.
Do you have any siblings?
I have one older brother.
His name is...
Amit.
Okay, so he got the less white name.
Yes, but he's the one... He actually looks more Arab.
Oh.
Because he has lighter eyes and he's taller. He's also fair. But his name Amit can also go for Amit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then... Our passports all say UAE, mm-hmm. so he gets detained.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I always laugh.
Just part
I'm
of
like,
the territory.
And then there's like me who just like walks, strolls on by. He hates me for it.
So, I mean, so you were born in Dubai? And
born
then
in Dubai.
Where did you go after that?
I was born in Dubai. I left when I was 6 and I moved to Bombay for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Toronto when I was 7 and then New York and then LA 4.5 years ago.
Wow. So what brought your parents? I'm assuming what part of India? You said northern India?
So yeah, my dad is from, well, they're from the big cities. So they're from, my mom is from Bombay, dad's from Delhi, but
uh-huh.
our origins are from North India.
Okay, got it.
So, Rajasthan.
Okay. Yeah. And so what led them to Dubai?
So there was a big emigration of Indians like to create the infrastructure in Dubai. So so there's like tons and tons of brown people
mm-hmm.
over
yeah.
there. So my dad was an architect and he moved out there and he was building homes and stuff for the sheikhs. And then my mom was in Kuwait at the time. She's a physical therapist. And so she was there, but we had a lot of family at that point in Dubai. So they were like, come over here.
Yeah.
And so then she came and then they got set up by my mom's sister.
Oh.
And... then
she's like, I know a nice
yeah basically
architect.
Yeah, that's how it happens though.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
like, I know so-and-so from yeah. this family and his
He's
last name is this.
Well, yeah, it seems like yeah my dad was friends with my mom's sister and
yeah.
like her like my uncle, and so
yeah.
they all used to hang out and they're like,
so they married for love.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which the fuckers, now they try to get me to do arranged marriage, and I'm like, really?
Can you talk about that a little bit? Just you mentioned something on your podcast that I just think is like so rich.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my dad wanted me to get basically married when I was 18, because
mm-hmm.
like his whole, and I don't blame him, his whole side is like all guys. Like all of my, like everybody in his side is like, they had a son.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I was the first daughter after a long time. And so they don't, I think I just like, threw them all in a frenzy. Like, they didn't
yeah.
know what to do with me. So,
yeah.
by, you know, my grandma got married when she was 14.
Yeah.
And so me as an 18, my dad's like, so you're getting married. I'm like, wow. So who the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, hell no.
And at this
like,
point, you're still in Toronto?
I'm in Toronto. Yeah. I'm like the rebel child. Yeah. I'm not the one who died. Like, I was the one clubbing when I was 15 years old. And and then when they didn't let me, I basically was like, oh, okay, cool. So I attempted to run away. And they caught me in an hour. Yeah. But then they were like, why would you do that? And I'm like, cool, because you don't let me go do anything. So, so then, like, this is how much of a dick I was. I made him drive me to the I was like, cool, you don't want me to go by myself and like get raped, fair, so you take me and pick me up. So he would drop me to the all age clubs, which is like we had all age ones, and so and then he'd like wait there till like 12:31 in the morning just to take me home. And I'd be like, okay, I'm done now. Let's
go. Oh, no.
That's so nice. My dad would never do that.
But I knew me that, like, I never did anything inside. Like, I wasn't the girl who was, like, dancing up on dudes. I didn't smoke. I didn't do drugs. I never drank. I didn't drink till 3 years ago ever. Yeah. So I was like, just let me go dance. Let me be with my friends. So I broke them really early. But they wanted me married in the time I was 18. That wasn't going to happen, though I was in a long relationship. And then when my dad, like, hated that I was with that boy for 4 years, made my life a living hell. But then when I broke up with him, he was like, oh, my God, why would you do that? I was going to invite their family over have you two get engaged. And I was like, that was never going to happen. Right. Fuck you guys. Because they like Indians love to put, like, put it on you. So it was my fault. And then I ended up in a long relationship for 2.5 years with somebody that they hated. And so my dad and I didn't speak for a long time.
Why did they not like him?
They felt, to be completely honest, they felt he was below me. That was he was a dance teacher and he was older than me, but they were like, why would you be with somebody like that? And came from like a film family in India, and they were, that's not our family.
But he was Indian.
He was Indian. They didn't care. I mean, no, they don't, my dad doesn't give a. It's like, that's what I'm saying. They make it so complicated. It doesn't just have to be that he's Indian. It's that he has to be your type of Indian, and then he has to be like from the same cast as you, and then like
a doctor.
Can you can you explain a little bit what that means? The same cast.
So to be honest, our family doesn't do this as much as most, but there is apparently a caste system in India, which I wasn't as aware of growing up because my parents didn't talk about it. But it's, I think it's like 5 castes. I don't know what they are by in like the Sanskrit term or the Hindu term, but there's the Brahmins, which we all know, they're the preachers, the priests, the top of the line. They're the vegetarians and don't do anything bad. And then there's the warrior caste, which is my caste, the ones who literally went to war. And so there is a type of us, like Punjabis and whatever, that people know are fiery, feisty people.
That's cool.
Then there's the and then there's like the businessmen class, businessmen. Then there's I think like the accountants or something. I think there is a distinction between the business and there's one other. And then there's the untouchables. So the ones that people know to be the ones in the slums or, you know, the ones who end up like if you're in India, they're your maids.
That's a huge like the jump class. From like an accountant to untouchable.
Yeah, and I think that's there's one below it that's like a like a worker type, and then there's untouchable.
So how does this caste system affect your someone's daily life or like their whole vibe in India?
You know, again, it's not as much for us, but there was a big story I remember in Canada actually once where a Canadian girl who was from my caste, the warrior caste. She went to India, fell in love with the cab driver who was probably the second lowest. So he wasn't untouchable. He was the one above that. And then they fell in love and she married him. Her family found out and her uncle and mother plotted and killed her.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And she was Canadian. She was a Canadian Indian.
Wait, how do you know this person?
I didn't know her. It was a big news story.
Oh, my God. What?
Yeah. And that's happened a lot. I mean, that's not happened a lot, but it does happen. Like,
it sounds like such a medieval system.
It is. And it's so weird because I think it's less in India. I don't know if you guys find this, but I feel like immigrants tend to be more cultural when they leave the country.
Right, because like, hold on to it.
But they do it so, like, my dad would be like, you can't wear tank tops, you can't do this. Yeah. And I'm like, fucking every girl in India is wearing it. Yeah. Like, why can't I?
Yeah, it's the same with my dad. Like, he is 100% the most liberal out of his family. But when he came here, he's like held on for dear life to some things that just make no sense, in my opinion. Yes,
exactly.
Wait, so they killed her basically because she married someone who was lower status than her.
Yeah.
How does that work? Why not kill him?
Well, I think they tried to kill both of them, and I think he survived.
So it's that much of a like a tarnish on your family's reputation.
I think it matters to people if it's like a big jump, like if a Brahmin's with the priest is with warrior caste, not as much.
Right.
If you go like big differences, then
so basically you stay within your own thing for the most part.
Yeah.
And there's momentum.
I don't think people, again, talk about it openly, but I think you sort of already know. Like, when you meet certain types of people, you're like, oh, you're this? Like, we know you're already. Like, again, if you meet somebody in the Rajput, like, which is my type, it's literally translated as son of kings. And that whole area where all the ones who used to go to war.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you're probably one of them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like
that's crazy.
That. Yeah, it's still nuts.
Have you ever met another Indian immigrant or someone that was Indian but raised in the Western world that, like, you can talk to you about that stuff and you're like, oh, what are you? Or, like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, all of my friends back in Toronto, it's weird. I don't have as many Indian friends in America, but all my friends in Toronto are Indian. Not all of mine. Like, I have all kinds of friends, but some of my best friends are Indian. And so, like, we all know about it there. I don't think anybody talks about it openly because it's just not a thing.
But do you
know... It's just, like,
But do you think when you meet them or when you did meet them in the past, did you think, like, I wonder what caste they are, kind of thing?
You know, it's weird. I didn't, only because I remember I went to Catholic school, which is so weird. Again, I don't know what my parents are. My parents are the weirdest.
Same thing. Yeah. They just put you in a private school, and then they were just like,
you're going to wear a uniform.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
All my parents
exactly.
Are like, cool, she's going to wear a uniform.
Like a long sleeve shirt, a jumper, you're fine.
Except, you know what's so funny? That my mom is the one who trimmed my kilt for me in like when I was in 10th grade and did it completely wrong, so it went like just under my butt, became like the and it was so funny because I had the she's all that moment where I was like a super nerdy girl with like bottle cap glasses, short hair, nobody looked at me, I was like one of the guys, and like literally like just overnight. A super nerd. And then one day I put contacts on and it was her kilt. And so I always just laugh. I'm like, guys, that wasn't me. It was my mom. My mom did that. And I was livid with her that it was so short. But
and they let you wear it?
Yeah, I mean, my mom is chill. I will say that. My mom is like the coolest, like most progressive. And both my parents are. It's just like my dad acts like he's not, which is so weird.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're
same
so
here.
Strange.
Yeah, like, I relate to that completely. I think we all... On your podcast talked about like how our dads are the ones that for whatever reason are more strict and like our moms are usually the ones that are like, I don't know, more forgiving, more accepting of us. And
they're just more, I don't know, they're more like liberal. They've seen a lot of the world, you know, and like I think the male experience and the female experience is very different.
Yeah, vastly I think different. They also just have a little bit more empathy. Like they can see how something affects you. Also, like my mom always says, like this thing is like you always marry your father in that weird way.
Yep.
And I think she didn't want that to happen so hard because she's got some weird beef with her dad. Like they talk, but like. She's very kind of like, hey, I'm my own person and please don't fuck with me. I left Iran by myself at a very young age to come here. So like there's like think about it, you know, my grandpa's a piece of work. But I just feel like she married her father. Like she ended up marrying a guy who's just like her father. And so she was always very conscious of like, you know, I keep finding myself around these like hard dudes who are like very like by the book and are very strict. So like I always felt like my mom would always kind of look out for me for that reason to just be like, I understand.
Yeah.
I had the same dad. I know what I've done to you. I've married my father. Like, be careful out there. So I respect that and how my mom, even though, like, she wasn't always, like, taking my side. Like, but Shio would always come and talk to me afterward and kind of explain the situation and hear me out without my dad's like being like, no, you know.
I talk about this all the time that like the my parents, I have such a different relationship with them where growing up, if my dad, even now, if somebody tells, like, he's the guy who says, no, you can't do this.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No explanation.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't fucking tell me what I can't do. I just go ballistic. Same. I'm like, don't fucking tell me.
Yeah.
My mother, exact same situation. She'll sit me down and she'll be like, look. So this is why you should do this. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that totally made sense. Like, why didn't he just say that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just like, no.
That's it. It drives me fucking insane.
Yeah. And now, I think especially when you are being raised in a more liberal, open society and you have parents that just seem like the most, in comparison to your friend's parents or whoever, they're just very strict. You just feel so bizarre and like very like, oh, I'm just going to be a freak forever. Like, I guess I can never go swimming with my friends. I guess I could never do this and do that. And so then you have to rebel to just feel like a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And those little rebellions like will make you feel alive and like, and all these things. And you I don't know. I was the child that got in the most trouble out of my sisters. Mm-hmm. I was definitely the rebel and the one that got in the most fights with my dad, especially. But I mean, like,
did you guys have, like, body issues because of it?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I am still, like, I'm a grown-ass woman. Mm-hmm. I'm 34.
I don't think you'll ever go
and
away.
And I can't. Mm-hmm. Like, I live in L.A. now. And, like, wearing bikinis and going to the beach, like, still make me feel weird.
No, I'm forever
and my friends
scarred.
Are, like, yelling at me all the time. What is wrong with you? You look, and I'm like, I'm just not used to.
Yeah.
I think, well, also they speak very openly about your body to your face, and you're like, okay.
Are your parents very blunt?
Oh, no. Indians are like notorious for.
I think it's like a thing in that region, like Middle East, India, their people are so blunt.
They just have like, it's always a backhanded compliment where like, it's a thing. So when I was younger, I was like, whatever they consider chubbier. So when I would go to India, they would say to me, oh, you look really healthy.
Yep.
And that's considered fat.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. Well,
exactly.
Now I've gone and like I got in a bad car accident. I've lost a lot of weight as a result of these things, whatever. Like it's an actual medical reason.
Yeah.
And I go there and they're like, oh my God. Why did you do that to yourself?
Oh my God.
You're never looking right. Yeah. You're never right.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
And like, again, but it's funny because in that way, I think men are better than women are, mm-hmm. at least over there, because the women are always like,
always.
My mom would always say to me, you know, if you were taller, I would have put you in beauty pageants. Says the fucking 5'1" woman who made me short. Like, my brother's 6'2" and everybody in our family's tall and I'm the shortest person because of her. And then she'd always like, I hated that. She would grab my arms and always be like, you know, all the rest of you is just this, like this. Like, what? And I'm like,
they're brutal that way. They're so brutal. And it's right in Arabic too, healthy. Like, oh, you got healthy. It's more like, oh, I got fat. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
oh,
what
yeah,
you mean.
Healthy.
My family will just be like, yeah, you've gained a lot of weight. And like my grandpa in Iran, my mom's dad will just be like, so you're fat.
Yeah.
Like I literally had that conversation mm-hmm. with him where I was like, yes, I guess I'm fat, which I like don't say anything else because I want money from him, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You're like, mm-hmm, I agree, I am fat. So anyway, what would you like to offer me?
Even just like the last time I saw my mom, it's always a backhanded compliment. She was like, your teeth, they were yellower before, you made them whiter. The toothpaste I gave you at work, and I'm like, we're in a restaurant with like, a waitress
there.
I was like,
you know, also, I don't know if this is a thing for you guys, but like being fair skinned and dark skinned is like a thing for Indian culture.
100%.
So, you know, the whole like fair and lovely. Yeah. And
I'm the darkest one out of my sisters. My older sister is very fair. I was the tan one, and tan in Arabic almost is like an insult.
Yep.
So I was the one that was the Semra one. I was the like less pretty one. I was the darker one.
Yep.
And that fucked me up. I was like hiding under shade my whole youth. Like, I hated getting tan. I hated the idea of being darker than I was already. I had such a complex about my body, and it just fucks you up. Like, like, the color of my skin is one thing, the shape of my body is another, and then you get boobs and you're like trying to hide them. I wore sports bras my entire high school because I wanted to flatten them to my body.
Listen, girl, you're literally preaching to the yeah. choir. I was the tomboyest yep. tomboy yeah. you've ever met. Yep. And then to be the one with the D cup is the
same.
Worst in life. And it's I'm literally worst. Always, like, through school, I would always hunch over.
I got the worst posture. Yeah, my mom yeah. was like, you ruined your boobs, you ruined your posture. And I'm like, I hated my body.
Yeah, yeah.
I hated my body. I cried when I got my period because mm-hmm. I, like...
Same, yeah.
I hid it from my mom until she found it in the trash can. Like, it's a whole thing, you yeah, know? Like, yeah. I don't know.
No, okay. I totally don't.
I'm yeah. sorry, I'm rambling, but we'll get back with Natasha after a quick commercial break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in exactly. to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right. which is different than empathy, yeah. right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already yeah. see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back.
We're back.
Oh, so sorry. Just to clarify, I cried when I got my period because it meant that I had to start praying 5 times a day, and I didn't want to because I didn't believe in God. So that's another reason why I cried, but it's not just my body.
You know what's funny? Like my parents will hate me for this, but in Indian culture too, like, I don't know. Again, I'm pretty sure it's the same with Muslim, but you can't be in a temple like if you have your period. Do you have that thing?
I don't think
like
you...
for us, like we're technically not supposed to go to the temple or like take part in a major prayer or ceremony.
I think it depends on how strict you are. I think it really depends
yeah.
on what.
Yeah,
kind...
I just gave that shit up a long yeah. time ago. I was like, listen, I'm just not gonna tell anybody. yeah. Who the fuck is gonna know? And yeah. two, I'm pretty sure my God is yeah. like, I gave you this, so yeah. I think he knows what's up.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not gonna play this game.
Yeah, it's definitely from person to person, I think, depending on how religious they are. Yeah.
See, like, I never heard that because my parents basically never spoke to me about anything like bodily
yeah
like no fluid nothing yeah. like no they never spoke to me about anything like it was yeah, frustrating same. After a while like and I never felt I could ask because it like maybe it would make them uncomfortable so
yeah I never wanted to ask
it was like weird and so I don't know anything.
I don't know anything about anything. Yeah. I learned so many things on the internet, and it's just not great that way.
I had to have a friend teach me how to use a tampon in high school because my mom was just kind of like, never said anything.
In college, my roommate talked me through using a tampon for the first time, and I was like, is this how I do it? It's all the way in? Like, how far do I go? And then, like, I don't know. Just like.
You still have to get, like, my mother is in the medical profession. Okay.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, that woman, once in a blue moon, will say the most ignorant thing I've ever heard. And her thing was, like, you know, when she heard I was using tampons, which I really didn't. I used to use pads for the most part. But there were times that, you know, you got to use a tampon. She would say to me, oh my God, like, she felt like that meant my virginity was taken.
And I was like,
you are insane, woman.
Yeah. No, same with us. It's like you're going to break your hymen.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like anything that you insert inside yourself.
I was like, I don't think that that's how this works, Ma. I don't think it's that deep.
No, seriously, riding a bike can break a hymen.
Yeah.
And so when I started using tampons, I told both of my sisters, like, you guys have to start using tampons.
Yeah.
We were idiots. Like, please do this. And then they started using it and they were just like, thanks. Like,
have you ever thought about, like, what would you do if you had, like, daughters? Like, would you be as open with them? Do you think we would, devolve into our parents?
I mean, I have decided long ago I'll never have children. But if I were to have a child and if she was a girl, I would definitely be more open with her. I would let her try to be confident with her body, with her sexuality. Like, I was such a fucking weirdo.
Yeah.
I'm still not comfortable being a sexual being. Like, mm-hmm. I have so many issues around that, and... I don't like blaming my parents for everything, but they do have a hand in how you're introduced to your body and how you're introduced to what your body can do and like what sex is and all this other stuff. So I would definitely try to be more open.
But I think I would as well.
Yeah.
I just also now I'm so like I've slingshotted so far to the other side. Like I will bring up things to my parents now and just like watch them. So they'll be like,
yeah, totally.
But like I would want to be like, hey, here's how you use a tampon. Let's try it. Like, let's, you know, like, what do you, take a mirror and look at your puss. Like, just do it. Yeah. Understand yourself.
I've had those combos with my mom, too, and she doesn't like tampons. She's tried them, but she doesn't like them. She's used to her own ways.
They're an acquired taste.
But, yeah.
For old Middle Eastern
but,
women.
But, yeah, I think, no, I was totally fucked up about my body. I had an eating disorder. I was very, like, self-conscious about myself. It wasn't because of what I looked like. It was more... I really think my eating disorder came from not having control in my life. And I need to control something.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about any magazines, any celebrities, being thin. It was not about being skinny. I was skinny my whole life. But it was about control. Mm. And it was about controlling one aspect that I knew I could. And that was what I put in my mouth. And what I ate and what it did to me. And that's just fucked up, man.
Yeah, I mean, I had a eating disorder for a few years. Actually, when I looked back, it started when I was 11. But for me, it was because, again, that same sort of thing of, like, being a tomboy, suddenly having big boobs.
Yep. Yeah.
Suddenly being the girl who out of everybody was, like, turned curvy. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It was the worst.
And, like, I just always thought it was me getting fat.
Yeah.
I never, for stupid me, because I like think I blanked out in like health, like sex ed class or health class we called it in Canada, that I had no idea what was happening to me because like I was complete blur. And so I just like stopped eating because I was like, oh, maybe this will make it go away. And I was like, nothing is making it go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, I mean, I danced for many years, so that fucks with your head too.
What kind of dance?
I was with an international company for like 10 years, so I used to dance and teach. And though everybody was really nice to me, like the head of my company, you know, but it was like a shitty environment where we would have to be in sports bras and short shorts and dance in front of, you know, everybody had to dance, and he would watch it on a tape and be like, what part of you is shaking?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, so people would be like, he would be like the back of her legs, her thighs, her this, her that.
Wait,
and
so
like,
your parents let you be in that dance place?
They never knew that. No, that was like our biggest fight with my dad and I was the dancing, and that's where I met my ex and whatever it was. So like my dad, his only thing if he wishes he could take out of my life was
dance.
Those 10 years of dancing.
Wow.
Even though like it taught me probably more than anything. But like, yeah, that whole experience just fucks with you in your body. So I understand that.
When did you realize that you wanted to be in the creative field?
I always knew. I was very lucky. I wanted to be an actor since I was 7 years old. And funny enough, my father was the one who told me that that's what I was doing. Aww. So there's a joke that my mom always says that when I was two, I used to like sit in front of the mirror and just like make weird faces. And Aww. She would come in and she once saw me crying in front of a mirror. And she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, and I just stopped. And I was like, oh, I just wanted to see what my face looked like. And she was like, that's so strange. And so I would always like dress up and do all these characters. And then when I was seven, my dad's like, you'd be a great actor. And I was like, that's what this is called. Oh, yeah. My God. And so then I just thought I wanted to be an actor until like, and I did it through all through high school. And then my parents, when it finally around like 15, 16, I was talking about like Juilliard. And I was like, oh, I want to go to Juilliard. And my dad's like, oh, I thought that was a joke. Yeah. You're not actually going to theater school. And I was like, what? And it like, and then I was broken where I was like, oh my God, now what do I do?
Yeah.
So then thankfully media had just like a media class just started, or media arts. And so I went in there and I had a great teacher who really like kind of took me under his wing and encouraged me a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that he actually joked. He's like, you know what you'd be really great as? He's like, you'd be a really great like host or producer or a great flight attendant. Wow. And I was like, that's okay. Like, I don't like to fly, so maybe this other thing.
Yeah.
And so then I kind of got into media there, and I had my first job in TV when I was 16.
Really? What were you doing?
Yeah, I started at a local TV station, so I always encourage anybody who's like trying to break in or whatever, like find your local place. And so it was like a big network, but they had their local affiliate.
Yeah.
And I knocked on their door and I was like, I've been in media class and here's my resume and you should hire me.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, okay. And then I walked out. But because I did that, the station manager saw me and he's like, who's that girl? Yeah. And he actually was like, get her a job. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I started as a teleprompter. I was a camera operator. And in a month, I became their first floor director at 16. And bossing around like big like mayors and Maple Leafs and all these like cool people that used to come in. So I used to do like 3 or 4 live shows. And then by the time I was 17, they asked me to be a news reporter. And I was like, I look like I'm 12. Like in general, I tend to look younger. So when I was like 17, I looked like I was 12. And my first news story came out and they really liked it. They asked me to write a documentary. A historical documentary for a big city. And I was like, guys, I'm 17 years old.
And you were doing this all while you were in high school.
Yeah, and I was like teaching dance at the same time and just lot. And I was working, I had a part-time job. And I don't know how I did it. But they then got me to write this documentary. I worked with the historian.
Wow.
And like a year or something later, and it came out. And I didn't even realize all the work I was doing on it. But I got my first writing and producing credit.
Yeah.
And then that ended up winning like a national and international TV award for the network. And I was like, what the fuck?
That's tight.
So then when I saw my first producing credit, I was like, whoa, producer, I guess that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so then it just kind of started my career.
How did your parents feel about it all?
They didn't understand anything I wanted to do because nobody in my family does this. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody in my family or my lineage really does this.
You know, that was weird when I kind of expressed interest in like filmmaking and making, just getting into like arts or just comedy in general. It's like they were such dicks about it. But like before my dad came to America, he was a theater actor.
Oh my God, that's the same
really?
With my dad.
Yes. He did I have all these photos of him, like all in all these different costumes. He would play like multiple roles.
Oh,
like he was one of his favorite things. He was like an actor.
Literally, my dad only told me this like 5-6 years ago, where my dad beat out of me any love. He would literally be like, you cannot act. Indian girls don't make it on TV. And I was like, and he was right. Back in the day, really nobody did. And then he tells me he used to do theater. I'm like, what the hell?
I know. It's so frustrating. I mean, they always make the points like, yeah, well, I didn't make it a career. It's like, yeah, but you fucking got to do what you wanted.
Yeah.
Like,
my dad is always like, they wanted me in Bollywood, but I said no. And I'm like, really?
Like,
that's sure,
amazing.
Dad.
Look, I had to beat them away from my door.
He always says that. He's like, oh, you have no idea how many of them, they wanted me in Bollywood. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I was like,
wow. That's such a weird classic cocky middle, like, just even like Muslim, or even, I don't even, brown dad who just thinks they're like the shit. And you're like, really though?
Oh, my dad won't stop.
Yeah.
So what did you do when you graduated high school?
I graduated high school. I literally went straight into, I went to Ryerson University, shout out RTA for,
is that in Toronto?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
For radio and television arts.
Do your parents care about that?
Yeah. So when I was applying for colleges, actually through school, because they were like, you are not doing this thing. I made a sort of a pact with myself mentally, and I said, well, okay, I'm going to do all the arts and all the sciences. So I did everything in media and arts, and I did literally all the science, maths. And I was a straight-A student, so I got, like, A's and everything. And when it came to applications, I said my number one choice, we got four choices. I said my number one choice will be Ryerson University, which is the best program in Canada for what we do for media. I said if I don't, the rest will be all science. And then so it was that and then all three science. I got all early acceptance and scholarships into science programs. And then on my birthday, I got a scholarship and acceptance.
What kind of science do you think you would have studied?
Definitely, like, I thought about it a lot. I wanted to be in, like, forensics if I was going to, like, I was really into, like, chemistry and, like, that weird, I don't know.
It's like CSI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've solved the case
with
DNA.
Exactly. It's like, I don't know, DNA fascinates me. Yeah. Something
about
it.
I was really into that, too. Really? I was like, if I was going to be a scientist of any sort, I would be a forensic scientist.
Really?
So I could be like, I've checked the samples and it turns out it was him. Exactly. But it was more like because I was watching too much CSI.
Yeah. No, it's so true. Yeah. Something, I don't know. It's just DNA.
I wanted to go into psychiatry and like brain shit, like neuroscience. I was into that.
You know, it's so strange. I always thought that I'd be really into like biology and I fucking sucked at biology. Yeah. But somehow I was so great at chemistry and physics, which says a lot about me in general, where like, I'll never get the easy thing right. I always get, like, as a dancer, I could do the hardest moves and complete. You asked me to just stand still and, like, not go out of balance, I would never be able to do it. Like, I was always the, like, girl doing this.
Yeah. Like, that was, I could never get into science. I didn't have the attention span.
Yeah.
I just was always like, sorry, you were saying something, but I'm thinking about, like, 500 other things at all times. Yeah. That was my,
But they, you know, my parents ended up supporting, like, my mom was always supportive. My dad, I think the first time he saw my producing credit, he was like, oh, that's my daughter's name on TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it started making sense to them a little more. And so since then, he's been sort of supportive-ish. And I think, like, by the time I was in my early 20s and when I moved to New York and I got my job at MTV, my dad was really proud.
Yeah, well, talk to us a little bit about that. What were you doing at MTV?
So I was a producer-writer for MTV News. I had done my internship from Canada in the New York MTV, and so I was at VH1. And I always said to everybody, I was like, cool, I'm going to graduate and move to New York and work for MTV.
Yeah.
And everybody just thought that I was, they literally used to be like, okay, cool. Like I had agents, like my agent was a big agent in Canada. He sat me down. He's like, that's not going to happen, darling.
Wow.
And he, you know, he's this old dude. Because it just, getting visas back in the day in Canada for this kind of thing to come here was near impossible. But I got really lucky that a lot of the things I worked on did really well. And so... long story short, I got very sick for like 7 years. So I had Lyme disease. And during the phase when I was like 20 to 23, it was really, really bad. So I basically like missed my last year of university because I couldn't actually physically go in anymore.
Yeah.
And so at the worst, they thought it was like maybe a rare brain disease that had no cure. Literally.
Yeah.
And when they finally said it wasn't any of that, I was like, fuck this shit. And I just was like, bye, I'm moving. So I moved to New York with two bags of clothes, no visa, no job, no anything. I was like, I'm going to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
And like, I think at that point, my Indian parents, who were probably so conservative, were like, let her go because I'd been through a lot. They were like, go. And so I came here and then I got my visa and I worked on all of that. And
Wait, so you moved here without graduating? Or...
No, I graduated. I did graduate. I just, the professors knew I couldn't, they knew I was ill. So they knew I couldn't come to school, but I would come for exams and tests.
Right.
But I couldn't like actually be there. So I graduated and, but
you moved without a job.
I moved without a job. I moved August 2008 and September 2008, they announced a recession. Every person I knew who I had a potential job opportunity with got laid off across all the networks I knew. Yeah. And then I was like, great.
Yeah.
So I literally like started from scratch.
Yeah.
So how did you end up at MTV after the recession?
So it took about 2 years. It took a couple years of interviewing like crazy. Thankfully, one of their heads of HR was Canadian. So the big thing was like coming as an immigrant, even though, again, we've talked about this, like how do people consider Canada so different? But Americans really do. Yeah. And so when they would look at my resume, they wouldn't get that these networks are like big networks in Canada. They would literally just be like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And she knew. So she was like, holy shit, like you've actually done a lot and I want to try to get you in here. And so one day a digital producer job came up. And again, this is way back before digital was a thing. And I had just produced a web series for the first time. And she saw it and she was like, you'd be perfect for this job. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't worry, you got this. And then like a week later, I got the job. MTV sponsored a second visa for me. And,
amazing.
And like, yeah, I was like...
You're the second guest we've had that's been able to stay in the States with a sponsor from work. And I think that's really amazing.
You know, it's weird because, again, very rare to happen, especially back at that time because of everything. But like, I had one of my own. So I had my own O-1 visa. And then MTV was trying to basically override that visa, but I didn't want them to. Because then I would be tied to MTV forever. Mm-hmm. And like if they fired me, God forbid, I would have been fucking shit out of luck. So I was like, no, fuck you, MTV. Get me a second visa.
Yeah.
And so then they did. But I tell people, I'm like, dude, that was an anomaly. Yeah. I don't know why they did that. Because I was an associate producer when I first started.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like high up the chain that they would.
So how did you get a visa to stay in the country when you first got here?
So I got an O-1 visa. It's called an Artist of Extraordinary Ability. Uh-huh. So you either prove like national acclaim, so Oscar whatever, which clearly I don't have, or you prove critical acclaim.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of the things I had worked on, like I said, had won lots of awards. Yeah. So like that first film, Priya, went like all over the world. Yeah. It was a Sundance Channel movie. It was, you know, won at NBC. Great. And then the projects as a producer I had worked on did really well at the time. So I just got really lucky that
you hustled,
I had a...
man.
Yeah,
I was like working all the time. And then, so I had like a decent enough package at the time.
Yeah.
And then from that, I got the O-1 equivalent of a green card. So like a green card that's, again, based on your work.
Yeah, I feel like Middle Eastern, I always say Middle Eastern, just brown parents don't seem to understand that even though we're not like a doctor, lawyer, engineer, whatever they want us to be, like they still instilled the hustle in us.
Yeah.
It's like we will still get our shit done even though we're not in like the main big money making, like reputation making careers. Like you don't seem to understand. I always feel like my parents think I'm just slumming it. And it's like, no,
totally.
I am out here breaking my ass, literally, or ass back. I'm also breaking my ass, eating poor food. And just like, I'm doing the work. I'm going to get where I need to go. I just am not in like a traditional career.
Yeah, they really instilled like work ethic. Like work ethic or bust. Like it's just like I think it's just like they pounded it into us. We're just like we're hard workers and we're going to be independent and provide for ourselves and all this other stuff. And it's because they raised us that way.
Right.
But then please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say real quick that, but then they, for some reason, think they failed if we don't go into those like main careers or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to say like, and you're so right, like they instill that work ethic. The only thing I wish, and I'm curious what you guys think, is like, I sometimes just wish that they didn't break my ego so much that like I could believe in myself a little bit more. Like sometimes like I wish that there were so many things that I feel like I could have done if they
I thought I could.
Yeah. And if I knew that they stuck by me. Like there's some things that now as a like really being grown and doing a lot of work, fucking a lot of therapy, that I like stand up for things. But even now, like when I go, if I go for a job, like my day job is as a creative executive, as a female creative executive, in general, I'm already facing a bunch of shit. But I'm sorry, I've fucking done 16 years of work. So when people, when I walk in a room, I know I look young, and then they see this resume and they're like, who the fuck is this person? My parents are always like, you know, I at some point in my career have learned to command a certain amount of money. That's because I've earned it. And my parents will be like, when it comes to a job, they're like, you know, don't be too like when you know pushy and stuff like that. Like, just take the offer that they give you. I'm like, why the, the fuck? Like, why can't you just be like, you've worked hard.
You deserve
this thing, and like, don't, you know, and like those things that I wish that they didn't.
I 100% agree. There's this nature of myself that I second guess myself and think I have, like, my work isn't as valuable as it is. Like, the work I've done, like, I'll be like, oh, but you're nobody. And I can't help it. Because it's like my dad is, you know.
We'll have to get a quick commercial break, but we'll talk more about this question in a moment.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Ilya Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So yeah, I relate to everything you guys are saying, what you were saying, Anna.
Yeah, I'm just saying, your parents basically make you think. It's crazy. It's like if you're not either doctor, lawyer, engineer, I always feel like those are the three or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just like in that area, architect, whatever, in some sort of medical field or scientist or whatever. Like there's this thing of like they think they failed you. So then they also kind of like break your ego down because they're being like, well, I mean, you can, you know, like I literally the other day I was on the phone with my dad and he was literally like, well, okay, but when you know, they can lay you off. So don't get excited. And I was like,
thanks for putting that idea in my head.
And I was like, but Dad, you don't understand. I'm like, you know, there's like two producers here. Like, if they wouldn't just lay me off. He's like, well, you know, these companies, you know, like budget cuts, you get laid off. And I was like, what the fuck?
I know.
Are you fucking kidding me? Like, I was like losing my shit internally. Like, don't freak the fuck out. But inside you're like, dude, like, what do you mean? Like, why would you even instill that fear in me?
Do they also like try to get you to like be humble? Like, for Indian culture, it's so much about humility because you're spiritual and you know what I mean?
Well, like, for us, it's about, like, the evil eye and, like, not having anyone curse you with it. So you have to not really talk about yourselves. Yeah. I'm still very bad at promoting myself or talking anything good about myself because someone might hear me and curse me. But, but yeah, and, I mean, my parents know this, and they're probably, my dad, if he listens to this, will get annoyed that I'm bringing it up still, but, like, I wish they were supportive of me when I was younger. Like, they're very supportive of me now, but I think I would have been more confident in my love of the arts and of poetry and film so early. Like, if I had known that I could do it, I would have done it. I wouldn't have had such like a late start, in my opinion. And, like, I became a resident advisor in college because they kept doing this thing where, like, we have to pay for your sister's medical school, and you have to go back to community college or figure out what you want to do. And I was like, I know what I want to do. I'm going try to pay for myself, and I'll be an RA. My roommate will be paid for. They kept fighting me on artistic things. I wanted to do photography, and then he like made me cry when he called me for my what's it called? Your freshman orientation. And this is all these little things. Like, we were in ballet when we were like toddlers, and we like had to stop because like my dad didn't like our skin being shown. And then I wanted to play cello, and I never learned cello because it was like against the religion at the time. And so all these little things that like I kept being told I couldn't do, I just imagine what I would have been like if I could just do them.
Yeah.
And
man, they're real buzzkills.
No, but you know,
but now they're so supportive and I love them for that, but it's almost like too little too late. Like, the one good thing about me being this fucked up about everything is that they were very lenient on my little sister. Mm-hmm. And they've supported her 100% in her art, her drawing. She's working on a Netflix show right now for a cartoon. Awesome. Like, she's doing everything that she wants to do at a young age, basically, like, killing it. And I really think it's because they saw that what they did to me didn't work. Mm-hmm. And maybe they disagree with me on that, whatever, but
I mean, conversely, I will say this about, like, brown parents is that, you know, as tough as my relationship was, especially with my dad for many, many, many years, where we just didn't speak for many years, and then it was tough getting out of all of that, you know, they have always physically been there for me for anything. If tomorrow something were to happen, they wouldn't even blink an eye to, like, send me money, which I'm like, I'm the, like, don't ever send me money. Yeah. And they're like, no, but, like, this is, you know, when it came to schools, like, I tell people, like, I'm lucky in that, you know, university, like, for Indian culture, it's a thing that your kids don't pay for school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, the parents pay for your schooling, and then you make sure you pay for your kids' schooling, you know? So, like, I don't have debt. And, you know, when I got into a really bad car accident 3 years ago, my parents dropped what they were doing and moved to LA for 4 months to take care of me.
Yeah.
And everybody I talked to is like, holy shit, my parents would never do that. And I'm like, yeah, that's the one thing I say, like, brown parents, like, they will,
no, they got your back.
Anything for you.
You're very right. And my parents would do that for me, and I think Anna's would do that for her. I think they love you so much, it like almost is painful. And they always worry about you. That's the thing. Their love turns into anxiety sometimes. Yeah. And that can be a little overbearing.
Yeah, they care a lot. Like, I remember one time I was so sick. I was up north at my parents' house. I was so sick and I had to be back in LA for work, but I couldn't like stay like conscious enough to like get back to LA, and I knew I had to get back. My mom drove my car down to LA and just flew back. Wow. Literally like drove me while I was passed out in the side passenger, put me in my apartment, was like, all right, bye, and then like went to LAX and went home. Like, it was like things like that where you're like, they have your back. I mean, they can be dicks along the way, and like,
no, but they love you. I mean, their love for you is so just vast. And it's not just love, that they really do care so much about you, and they'll do anything for you. But that at the same time almost like freaks me out.
I think the way that for me, like, I learned to sort of not even just forgive them. A big part was forgiving them. Was like it after like a couple years in therapy. You know, I finally just one day hit me how like they are just humans mm-hmm. and they were just young people. Mm-hmm. And like when I think of like my parents were 30 and 31 when they got married and they, you know, my mom was 34 when she had me. I'm like, God damn it. I couldn't imagine having a kid right now. Yeah. Like I can't, you know, and most parents, like so many parents are younger who mm-hmm. are from that, like our, you mm-hmm. know, region of the world. That like, yeah, of course they fucked up. We're fuck ups.
Yeah.
We're constantly yeah. fucking up. We just yeah. don't have anybody else that we're fucking up because
no, you're right. I think they tried their best.
Yeah.
You know, they're humans and they tried their best and I love them and I think I've forgiven them for the most part. Sometimes I'll just get triggered sometimes and like blow up.
Yeah.
I mean, especially recently I'm like dealing with some stuff, but yeah, I think I love them and I'll always love them and I just want them to like, and I know they'll always love me. It's almost, I don't know, there's a closeness that I think a lot of people that aren't brown or from that region, that they don't really understand, like, that closeness of family. It's like, it almost, like, trumps everything. Like, it's, mm-hmm. like, above anything else, like, your family.
That's funny you say that, because one of my dad's favorite movies, outside of all, like, dog rescue movies where a dog rescues someone or something, that's my dad's genre.
That's really funny.
That's all he talks about. But he also loves My Big Fat Greek Wedding, because mm-hmm. he's like, it's very similar to, like, brown culture, where the family is always around you and everyone takes care of you. And then he always goes, white people, no culture.
Yeah, they always say it. It's always a thing.
Like, they don't know what they're... Yeah. They don't care about you.
No,
like,
it's true, though. Everyone loves that movie. That's yeah. Middle Eastern.
But I would always be like, yo, well, at least they got to wear tank tops and paint their nails down. Yeah. As a kid, I'm like, get out of here.
Yeah.
They really just tried their best. Yeah. You know, they tried their best and... Every kid is a little fucked up from their parents. It's just a matter of, like,
I think about it
them.
Where I'm like, man, if I had a kid, guaranteed they'd somehow be fucked up. Like, even though I think I know what I'm yeah. doing. And I'm like, somehow, even yeah. the people who think that they know what they're doing, they're like, I have friends whose parents were therapists. You would be like, they're the most they've got to be the most adjusted people. No, they like, one of my friends who like, I love to death, he overthinks like everything.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, so like, that's fucking up your kids. Yeah. Like, there's no way you can't.
But how do you make your child fucked up enough to be funny?
Right? You know?
I just imagine my kids gonna be like, my mom is high all the time and seems to not remember where anything or anyone is. I'm just like, oh, fuck, I fucked you up by just being too far left compared to my parents.
Yeah.
No, that does not sound... I'm not going to have kids. No.
Do you remember that running bit a while ago where I kept saying that you had a kid that you were ignoring?
That was a while ago, yeah. I don't know if our... Hey, fans, do you remember?
Anyway, it wasn't a bit. It was real.
No,
Shireen's daughter has reached out to me. It's a cat.
It's a cat?
No, I don't know. I wish.
So now you're in L.A.
Now I'm in L.A.
What are you doing now? Like, what's your day-to-day look like?
So I used to work for Disney for a few years till last year. So I was a creative exec in current series programming. So when I first came here, I was working for Fox on a show called Utopia, and then I moved to Disney, or Maker Studios in Disney. And so I was doing that. And then last year, I went out sort of on my own, and I was like having this, for the first time, crisis in my life where I was like, mm-hmm. what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. Do I want to do this forever?
Yeah.
I was like, I've been doing this for so long. What the fuck? And I finally realized, like, I'm not totally sure I wanted to work anymore for a network, because that's what I've been doing most of my career. And I just felt like I was making things for other people and mm-hmm. I should be making stuff for myself. And so I am currently developing three different series. One is scripted, two is unscripted, that are out pitching right now. And I'm producing a show, a series with Critical Role. They're these big gaming influencers. They do a big Dungeons & Dragons show. Okay. So they have a show called All Work, No Play. So I produced 8 episodes of that series, which I'm doing right now. It just premiered, guys. Check it out on Twitch and YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's been really, really fun. And just being part of that gaming world is not something I like did before, but now I have all these gaming followers on Twitter.
That's so cool.
I'm like, cool.
That's rad.
So is that why you originally came to LA, to just kind of continue your career? Or?
I came because I New York was getting me tired, and I was like very, very like burnt out. Like MTV, I love my years there, but I worked a night shift in news, and I worked from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. for 4 years, and then I worked every holiday, I was on call every weekend. I've worked through Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's, like anything. So I never had time off, and it just wore me down, and I was finally like, I can't do this anymore. And literally I was getting like migraines to a point that the doctors were like, you're going to – like, you're gonna, something's gonna happen to you.
Your head's literally gonna implode. Yeah,
like, you need to.
Did you move to LA with a job?
No. I did not move to LA with a job.
It's a trend with you.
Yeah, it is. It is. Though I'm done.
Go where you gotta go.
I didn't. I came for 2 weeks and I wasn't sure. And then my mom was like, what are you doing? Just stay. And I was like, what? And I literally sold everything I had in New York that I was there for like so many years. And I just sold it in 2 weeks and I moved back because that's just what I do. And figured it out here and got pretty lucky with the Fox job. And then
did they sponsor you?
No, I mean, I've had my green card now since like 2013. So I've been pretty good.
Okay,
it's like funny because when I used to date people, like that was like a weird thing. They'd be like, oh, you're Canadian. And like internal guilt, I used to think that they were judging me because they thought I was using them for a green card. And I'd be like, oh, no, yeah, I am Canadian, but I have a green card. It's like, I'm not trying to marry you. I, like, actually am interested.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird that you get like that.
Yeah. So do you plan on staying?
Yeah, now I'm done. I tell you, I'm done. I'm not moving anymore. Yeah. It's like they try every other day. My family, like I just got a new nephew. Aww. He's like literally 10, 11 days old.
Aww.
And my phone is filled with his pictures now. I never thought I'd be that person. And so my family is very like, you should move back. And my best friends are like, you should move back. I'm like, And I really do miss everybody, but no, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
It's too much. Moving sucks.
Moving does suck.
Fucking shit. It's an exciting time, you know, just to like – it's scary, though, like what we were talking about where this is something I think I should have done a long time ago.
Same.
Like I'm 34, and I had setbacks because of my health for like 7 years, but – still, like, sometimes I'm like, fuck, if I felt that support in my 20s, I think, like, my life might have been really different, you know?
Yeah.
And I know it was different times, too, back then with even being, like, diverse and person of color and entertainment. But still, like, now my parents are so, like, now I freak out. I'm always like, I don't know, guys, I don't know. The money.
Mm-hmm,
and my parents are like, money isn't everything. Go live your dream. And I'm like, really? Now you're fucking saying this to me?
It's like, how fucking dare you? Yeah, my dad says that too. Like, it's okay, the money will come. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to, like, snap your neck. Like,
I know.
How dare you? You spent my whole life telling me I need a job with money so I can support myself. And now that the money's kind of here, you're going to be all like, relax.
I know.
It's like,
I
God.
Know. I
they
know.
Really are a weird conundrum sometimes.
Yeah, really. It's just a...
But it's fun.
Yeah. They're the best. They
somehow
really are
it's
the
fun.
Best.
Sophie's sitting here like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
She's like, I don't know how any of this is fun, but.
It's a roller coaster of emotions.
But at the end, they're the best, you know?
Yeah.
They got your back and
I think
they support
everybody's
you.
Parents are the best. To be honest with you, like everybody's parents are quirky and weird and they fit each other perfectly in their own nutty fucking way.
They're definitely nutty.
Mm-hmm. Including
mixed nutty.
Mixed nutty.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Just brand that.
Yeah.
And you guys wouldn't move anywhere else, right? You guys are from here.
No.
I probably have nowhere to go.
That's why I say like, where would I go
I've been
now?
Here for like 5.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I would go somewhere else for sure. I think I just for what I want to do now, LA is where I want is where I need to be.
I feel like the furthest I would go is only after I had enough money and success that I could live elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how
like,
I
like right
say
now
too.
I don't really have
totally.
That sort of luxury.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
I can't
yeah.
just be like, guys, find me in deep Malibu. You know, like I can't I wish like sorry, my home doesn't have service. You'll have to call the landline.
Mm-hmm.
Which I will never answer.
I would love to live in like a foreign country though.
But
yeah, I also agree. Like I would rather be more stable in my career and stuff. So whatever that is.
I know. It's like interesting though, like sort of freelancing and working for myself now, like, I am for the first time exploring options, like, back home in India.
Yeah.
Which, like, I would never, ever have done before because I've always, like, been with a job, like, you know, a regular thing. And for the first time, I'm like, this is kind of something I wish I had done in my 20s and I couldn't.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I had visas and green cards on the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I'm like, I could do anything.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Should I? And it's so weird. Like, when I was younger, again, my parents were like, never. India's so corrupt. The business is so corrupt. Bollywood is so corrupt. And, like, now my parents are like, go take meetings. Like, go meet people. I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah. You just can't win.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've been freelancing the entire time I've been in LA, and it's like it's a mixed bag. Like, sometimes you're really busy, and sometimes you have an existential crisis all the time. So.
I am always like, you know, I guess I don't know about you guys, but when you're independent and like a brown female, like, and you're trying not to, because we come from, you know, homes where, at least in mine, it would have been, you know, when I was younger, my dad would have said, it's my money. Mm-hmm. I'm helping you do this. And blah, blah, blah. And I've never wanted to hear that. So I was very independent. I stopped taking money from him when I was like 15, 16 years old. And so I have come to a point where I've had literally $1.25 in my bank account. Mm-hmm. I was ill. I was 20 years old. I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to make it to school because I don't have enough money for a bus ticket.
Yeah.
And I, you know, remember praying and crying and being like, holy shit, I don't know how this is going to work out. And then my professor calls me and gives me a $10 an hour coordinator job at his company. And I'm like, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And like, because of having been in that position, I am like anal about finances.
Yeah.
I am like I freak out before, then there's no reason to freak out.
Yeah.
And like, my parents are like, calm down. I'm like, you don't understand. You did this to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't ever want to hear you say.
No. Yeah. I'm the same way. Now I can have like $50. I'm like, great. I have $3.
Yes.
Yeah. That's it. Exactly. My life's over. Like, I have, you know, like, because my parents have like nailed into me to save all my goddamn money. If I spend like $4, I'm like, I'm broke. I'm broke. I can't do this anymore. I can't live my life. Like, I'm just like having a meltdown and it's like, I actually will be fine. But they've instilled it in you. Like, it's crazy. So like, my dad's favorite line is, I'm broke. I can't afford it. And it's like, you're like watching him drive away in a BMW. You're like, okay.
Really, Dad? I know.
That's funny. Right? Because my dad's, one of his like least favorite qualities about a person is being cheap. So even though we didn't grow up with a lot of money, my dad didn't make it seem that way because he was never like cheap. He doesn't like the idea of like skimping out for yourself or whatever. It's just like,
oh, my mom was totally that person. She's like, oh no, you don't need that.
Yeah, my dad was treat himself with absolute luxury and then act as if he has literally like
nothing,
like he lives on the street or something to us, as if to be like, you've literally ruined me. And we're like, can I just have some food? Like, can I have $5? He's like, oh God, how will I get through tomorrow?
Is that a Persian thing? Because my Persian friends are like that, where like they drive the nicest cars and whatever, and then they'll always be like, man, I don't have any money.
I don't know.
And I'm always
probably.
Like, but this is a pretty, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like my dad's, I feel like more culturally it is. Like, I am not, you know, I guess I'm kind of like that. Like, I have some money saved up, but like, I'm always terrified I'm about to be broke.
Yeah.
And my dad always tells people to like, never let people know how much money you have. And it's like,
oh yeah.
It took a long time for me to like create a decent savings because I'm like, it was hard because my dad refused to give any money. He said, if you're moving to LA, you're doing it by yourself and don't bother me, basically. Mm-hmm. So I just had to come out here and hustle, like, you know, like for a while, like it was just madness. It sucked.
What do you guys want to do?
Oh God, I have no idea anymore.
I mean, outside of this being the next big show, to make it on TV.
I want to direct things. I'm a filmmaker, and I would love to like.
You want to be a female director,
I want to be a director.
Yes,
Natasha.
True. I'm just putting that part out there because it's like there's so many people.
I want to be
like
a filmmaker. I want to keep making movies. I want to direct things and just make stories and film and stuff, and I'd like to think I'm already doing that. It's just that I can't fully provide for myself. 100%.
Yeah.
So you would like to be a director who's like successful and has their own, who has the ability to make their own choices,
yeah,
in creative choices, not just make your own choices, but like have the ability to make
to think of
the
like,
films
yeah.
that you want to make or
and
whatever.
To, like, think like, oh, a budget. Like, that's something I have.
Someone else to give you a budget? Oh, yeah. What a dream.
That's yeah. true, right? And what about you?
I have no idea. I came to LA being like, I want to be a writer filmmaker. And then slowly I was like, I hate being on set. Set is like the longest bullshit.
It's the worst.
Just never ending. Day. Sorry, we're actually going 4 more hours. Like, I hate myself. Like, it just, I PA'd a lot when I first moved to LA. And it just, I realized, you know, this isn't my thing. Mm-hmm. I would rather be behind the scenes. So honestly, like, then I became a producer. And then I started producing live comedy shows. And I was like, oh, I want to be a comedy producer. And then I started producing podcasts. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I'm good at with like editing software, so I can like make things happen if I need to. Like, I don't have to outsource anything and pay people. Like, I can do it all myself. And now I'm at this job, and I have no idea where to go from here. Mm-hmm. I know I want to be behind the scenes in a creative place. I don't
like
know...
as a producer is like a...
yeah. I want to be a creative producer. Yeah. I don't know if where or what doing what though.
Yeah.
It's very like up in the air at this point. I think I would have to be drawn to something
totally,
you know.
Yeah,
God, who
it's
knows?
Fair. Yeah, I mean, there's so many avenues to take.
Like, if someone was like, you can be a creative producer at this restaurant where you just pick the colors that the food is, then I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. I don't know.
You know, that's the thing with this business. Like, there's so many young people who start, and they're always like, oh, you have to know this one thing. And I'm like, honestly, you don't know. Yeah. So in the beginning, try everything, yeah. and then you'll yeah. figure out the things that you
thing.
Like and don't like.
That's the other thing. I really feel like I'm like a jack of all trades, master of none. Like, I feel like in my head, if I had focused on just that one passion, I would have been great at it. But instead, I'm also like, I make art, I write poetry, I like write songs for myself. Like, it's just like all these little things that like distract me from the bigger picture of, and maybe it's my subconscious being like, I can't do it, so do this. I can't do this.
I don't think that's distracting. I think that's a collective whole of you as an artist is creating all these different things. Mm-hmm. I don't find that to be a distraction. I think that adds to how it adds and it teaches you about your own creativity and what you can accomplish and how I think that actually adds to you as an artist.
Aww. Yeah, I was going to say, I think like, you know, as somebody who got a lot of flack even a few years ago for, like I said, I started doing every single, like I have been a gaffer mm-hmm. to a switcher, yep. to a director, to a producer, to a publicist. I was a publicist for 7 years that people don't know
wow.
about. You know, I've done everything. And when people look at my resume sometimes, like I've had to take shit out because yeah. it like can be like, holy shit, this
yeah.
person. And they've actually had that where years ago people used to say, well, what are you?
Yeah.
And now, because times have changed and you realize, well, you actually need somebody who knows everything because mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. not the type of world anymore where it's just like a producer just yeah. produces, a writer just writes. It's like you need people who do it all.
Yeah.
That I now use that as my advantage. And now I just say, yeah, you know what? Well, this part informed me for this part and this part informed
that's
me for this part.
Point.
And that's how I'm a hybrid because I used to be really, really embarrassed that like, actually, not even embarrassed. I got really defensive that I was also an actor.
Yeah.
So when I even got my job at MTV, my friends told me that they judged me when I first got my job. They're like, because of the way I look, and I'm aware of whatever people's perception might be. And they thought that I was just going to – they actually said the words, we thought you'd be a dumb bitch. Because they had Googled
yeah.
me and they saw a picture
yeah.
and they're like, this girl, a digital producer?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's so
she'll
wild.
Be gone in a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then I
we
came in.
You'd be a dumb bitch. That's so rude.
I came in. I was the fastest learner out of anybody
yeah.
who'd ever had the job before. I far surpassed, like I literally was the only person at MTV News who knew every single person's job. So I could pitch a story, write the story, produce
yeah.
the story, edit the story, post the story, and like put it on social media.
Yeah.
And nobody else knew how to do any of that. But whenever I came into a job, even now, I would get really embarrassed when somebody Googled me. You can't remove
yeah.
your digital footprint.
Yeah.
And then, so I actually went to therapy and I was like, I don't know what to say anymore because I get defensive. So she was like, what are you saying to people? And I'd be like, you know, it's just a side thing that I do. Don't worry. You know, it's mm-hmm. just a creative outlet for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
she's like, that actually makes it sound like you want it more than
whoa.
You might
yeah.
even be like meaning to. So I was like, okay. So she taught me a lot to like embrace it
mm-hmm.
and to talk about the way it influences my actual work. So I tell people now, I'm like, yes, you know what? I am also a performer. Actually, the reason I got into entertainment at all and my path in producing was because I started as a performer and I couldn't go to theater school. And mm-hmm. so I realized yeah. I was really good at this. And being a performer has taught me to be really malleable. And so now I can like go into many situation and yeah. like I know what to do, you know, and mm-hmm. like I can adjust and yeah. I know how to take direction. So like I use those things now.
No, that's
and
a
like
good point.
Those are ways to like, because I just know that feeling, mm-hmm. and I'm like, we got to just get out of our own fucking
I really
way.
Think yeah. you're right. And it's funny that you guys talk about not liking being on set, or at least Anna, because my first day on a real set was like the day I was like, oh, this is where I want to be. Like, I've been PAing on like just for years, and so I've been in every single department. I've been in camera PA, I've been in wardrobe PA, I've been like special effects, like blood gushing, like pumping, like in the background PA. I've been director assistant, producer assistant. I've done it all, and I think it's all educated me to be a leader in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know you're right, and I mean, to be honest, maybe this. I was also like, I'm. And when I first started having this podcast with Anna, I was afraid that people would think of me as a podcaster and not a filmmaker. Mm. And one of my friends was like, well, based on your social media presence, you are a podcaster, not a filmmaker. You post about it way too much. And I'm like,
I
was like,
people.
Well, why can't I just be a filmmaker that has a podcast? You know
yeah.
what I mean?
It could be anything.
And so,
who's his friend? Name names so I can shame
him. He's dead to me. Okay.
You're dead to us.
Right.
But it's true. Like I can do it all. If I wanted to, and I don't have to just be like, what are you? Same with like your race, like you look like you're ethnically ambiguous, what are you? Just like, well, I don't know, I'll just be myself, and
remember,
I can
best...
be a filmmaker, I can be have a podcast, and
the best filmmakers know everybody's jobs.
Yeah I think
the
it's
best
true.
Filmmakers know how to pull from all yeah. of it, because you're going to be talking to every person in every department
yeah.
and
yeah.
you've been working at every department
and you understand yeah. everyone's experience
yeah
so I you're... think it does educate you for what you want to do. And I think I'm starting to appreciate that. I'm a little self-conscious still, because this person told me this like 5 months ago and I was like,
kill them.
Yeah, but, you know, Pete, you just gotta do you. Like yeah. everybody has some fucking comment to make. Like
everyone really yeah. does.
I get comments every day from people about like things I don't even ask anybody about.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? Just like, did I ask you? So
no,
just stop
no,
stop telling me.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Some people are like, you know, you're not you need to like embrace like your sexuality and like do more like, and then some people are like, you know, you gotta like watch what you're posting, because then it comes off like this. Oh my god, do you know that you're like saying really personal things? Like sometimes you have to. Oh my god, you know what? You should
so
be
much
more
unsolicited
personal.
Advice.
Yeah,
just do you.
It's never
boo.
Ending.
And I'm always like, I didn't fucking notice shit about your life.
Yeah,
no.
You know why? Because I'm really busy.
Yeah, worry about yourself.
So maybe you need to be really
exactly.
busy.
Exactly.
Wow, this has been truly.
Yeah,
we have to have you on again.
You're such a fun
so
person
fun.
To talk to. You have such
you're
a
very,
cool life.
You're quite, yeah. I love how truly open you are about your experiences. Because some people tend to not. I don't know. It's like a weird thing sometimes when you're trying to be like, dude, these immigrant parents, am I right? And someone's like, well, I mean, and you're like, come on, man, let's just fucking shoot the shit about this trash. Like, hey, we've gone through it.
I'm sure.
And you just want someone to really, you know, fucking vibe with. And I feel that with you.
No,
and
totally.
You're
yeah.
a wonderful guest.
You really are.
And I
you
think
guys
our,
are awesome.
Our fans will get that we were vibing out here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My yeah. parents would hate. They'd be like, are you high? Why do you keep saying this vibe? But
no, but really, you are such yeah. a pleasure to talk to and to have on. Too. I'm excited for our fans to meet you and to hear us on your show, Kinda
yeah,
Dating.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Tell
That'll
us where,
yes.
yeah, tell us where they can find you and your show and
plug
yeah,
yourself,
we're Kinda Dating on all the socials, and we are on anywhere you find your podcast. So Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, CastBox, mm-hmm. and now we're on YouTube.
Oh,
so
nice.
You could see your beautiful faces
oh, yeah.
mm-hmm. on the YouTube channel.
Showed up camera ready, baby.
Yeah,
yeah you did.
Yeah, go to the YouTube and watch us talk.
Yeah, so just search Kinda Dating or Natasha Chandel. And I'm at Natasha Chandel on Instagram and Facebook, and Natasha_Chandel on Twitter.
Nice.
That's awesome. We yeah. are at ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, where you can, you know, find our stuff. We are on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, A-M-B. We're on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, A-M-B-I-G. I never remember anything. What else? Oh, I'm on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, A-N-N-A-H-O-S-S-N-I-E-H. I tweet about whatever. Currently Free Jamie. She Mensa got her account suspended because apparently Mensa's filled with sensitive people who are terrified of Jamie Loftus. It's the randomest
thing. Understand.
It's like, chill out, Mensa people. We're about to get some Mensa hate from me saying all this. They are intense. That's out here.
I don't know enough about them to hate or not hate, but
I do want to tell a quick story though that my mom is like, I guess, one of those IQ geniuses where she took an IQ test in the 80s and she scored so high that they asked her to take the test to like see if she can get into Mensa, and she did, and she declined the offer to join Mensa because she was like, they just seem like they would send too much mail.
Oh my god.
Which is like 80s Persian lady, like, honestly, I just am not looking to get any mail from you guys. Oh my god. She declined a membership after taking, like, the fact that I know I could get in, like, is enough, and I'm just honestly, I'm just busy, like, you know. Like, I just got married, you know, I just think
it's literally like my dad with the Bollywood stories. Yeah. Like, Bollywood wanted me and I said no.
Yeah, she's just like, I love that it's all just like, oh, I'm just not interested in any mail.
Yeah.
Like, so
love that.
I'm a
How
genius,
awesome.
But
the mail I can't handle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the hardest questions in life. It's the mail.
Yeah. We're also on Facebook. Just search Ethnically Ambiguous and you'll see me and Anna's face.
That's right. I never remember Facebook.
And buy our merch on tpublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. Our link is in our bio
and on our website.
And our Twitter and our website and all that good stuff. And I am Shireen. My Instagram is Shirohero, Sheerohero. And on Twitter, I'm Shireen Y, Shereenwhy. Follow me, please, because Anna is just owning me on Twitter. You have more followers than me in the podcast combined.
What is it? Controversial stuff. No. I'm so controversial. I'm not at all. I'm just tweeting that Mensa members feel like cult members currently.
No, but you're a goddess on Twitter.
You gotta retweet, baby. No, Twitter followers are from Daily Zeitgeist. Nobody cares about me.
I had to like clear up my entire Twitter feed with anything political.
Really?
Because of like potential jobs. I was everybody's getting mad sensitive now. I was like, delete everything.
Luckily, I got the one job where I can just
can
wild out
want.
On the internet.
Right in your mouth.
Like,
oh, dude,
great content. It's the worst. I hate my life. Okay, go ahead. Are we done?
No, we're done, I think.
Oh, would you like to bite that ass?
I would love to.
Consent, you guys. Hashtag consent. Leave women.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.